www.natalieshields.org. My name is Alan Muirhead. Natalie Fields should be in next week. And please stay tuned for her turn. And don't forget, you can donate today until midnight and get your donation matched. Thank you.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and TNW Ensemble Theater, presenting Scammed, a new comedy running March 13th through March 23rd at TNW Ensemble Theater, 1957 Winnebago Street. When a freelancing editor falls for a classic scam, she assumes the amoral alter ego of Helen Wheels to get even. Tickets are available at the door with cash or check, or online through Ticket Tailor. More information is available by calling 608-770-0826.
Good morning and welcome to Her Turn, a program of news and information from a feminist perspective. I'm Eliza Howard.
And I'm Christina Kivlin. On today's show, the ACLU of Wisconsin explains why you should vote no on the upcoming April 1st constitutional referendum.
The National Women's Law Center is teaching the public about the harm of the upcoming House budget resolution.
Research shows that women around the world are being unfairly targeted and imprisoned by far-right laws.
Elon Musk spends $11 million in attack ads on the upcoming Wisconsin Supreme Court election.
Public health is protected, promoted, and advanced by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. But how will things change with RFK Jr. at the helm? We'll talk with Dr. Adrienne Fu Berman to hear her concerns.
So stay tuned for all this and more on the Sunday, March 16th, 2025 edition of Her Turn.
A House subcommittee hearing abruptly ended on Tuesday after a Republican lawmaker was confronted over misgendering Representative Sarah McBride, a Democrat from Delaware and the first openly transgender member of Congress. After Republican lawmaker Keith Self referred to her as Mr. McBride, she responded, "Thank you, Madam Chair," before beginning her remarks. Then Representative William Keating stopped her to request that Self repeat his introduction. After Keith again misgendered her, Keating called out Self for being out of order and having no decency, Self then adjourning the meeting. This incident is part of a pattern of disrespect she's faced in the past, too. Despite these personal attacks, Representative McBride's response has been remarkable. She consistently emphasizes her commitment to serving her constituents and her dedication to making the world a better place. Even when faced with targeted policies and blatant misgendering, her focus remains on the issues that matter to the people she represents. Her statement, "I'm not here to fight about bathrooms, I'm here to fight for Delawareans," exemplifies her unwavering dedication. She's chosen to rise above the negativity, demonstrating a powerful commitment to public service in the face of adversity. This story highlights not only the challenges faced by transgender individuals in politics, but also the strength and resilience of a representative determined to serve her community, even when faced with the breakdown of decorum within the halls of Congress itself.
Two groups backed by Elon Musk have spent more than $11 million attacking progressive judge Susan Crawford and supporting the Trump-aligned candidate Brad Schimmel in the April 1st election. This election will determine the majority on Wisconsin's highest court. This was already a high-stakes election. The progressive majority that was won in 2023 struck down the gerrymandered maps that had given Republicans lopsided majorities for over a decade. The upcoming court could consider the 1849 abortion ban, a law restricting collective bargaining for public sector unions, and the legality of Wisconsin's congressional maps. While the election is nonpartisan, conservative candidate Schimmel is running an unapologetically MAGA campaign. Though right-wing money is pouring into the race at an unprecedented level, Democrats have already contacted twice as many voters as they did during the last Supreme Court race. There are also allegations that Musk is putting money into this election due to a lawsuit involving Tesla in Wisconsin that could be seen by the highest court.
On February 25th, the ACLU outlined the dangers of the constitutional referendum on Wisconsin's April 1st election. The referendum asks whether a new section should be created to require specific photo identification to be allowed to vote. The ACLU explains that Wisconsin's voter ID law is already one of the strictest in the country, and that by cracking down on more, it would make it much harder for many marginalized communities to be able to vote. The proposed section also seems to be a solution for a non-issue. In-person voter fraud has only had 31 credible cases out of 1 billion ballots cast. The ACLU then called for an expansion of ballot boxes rather than trying to further limit voting rights. ACLU Wisconsin joined over 20 other organizations in opposing this referendum and called on lawmakers to stop legislating by constitutional amendments as a way to bypass the governor's veto pen.
On March 4th, the National Women's Law Center held a webinar to draw attention to the harm of the House budget resolution that was passed on February 25th. The resolution includes funding cuts to offset policies like attacking immigrant families and creating tax cuts for the wealthiest people and corporations. Although House Republicans have promised not to touch social service programs like Medicaid, the resolution advances a budget cut that cuts trillions of dollars for the committees that administer these programs, which may leave these committees with no choice but to reduce or eliminate their services. These social service programs like the Child Tax Credit, Medicaid, SNAP, WIC, and more are critical to millions of women and children across the country. They provide food assistance, health care, and make it easier to afford child care. The National Women's Law Center is working to educate the public about the importance of these programs and to facilitate conversations with Congress.
30 years ago, the Beijing Declaration and Platform for Action united 189 governments in an ambitious blueprint for change. A global review by UN Women makes one thing clear. While strides have been made, the fight is far from over. On Wednesday, during the CSW 69 opening, UN Women is calling for 6+1 priority actions to drive real change, and they are a digital revolution to close the gender gap in technology, freedom from poverty through strong societal protection, zero violence by transforming harmful norms and supporting survivors, equal decision-making power for women in politics and beyond, peace and security that prioritizes healthcare over warfare, climate justice that ensures progress does not come at the planet's expense. The plus one is our youth, the next generation of leaders and change makers. Their voices must be heard.
The rise in far-right policy is causing a global increase in the number of imprisoned women. Worldwide, the number of women in jail is rising twice as fast as men. With an increase in backlash against women's rights, research shows that laws are increasingly being used to target women. Women are disproportionately being locked up for petty theft, such as stealing food for their kids, falling into debt, or begging. These women are being labeled as criminals for acts driven by poverty. Although many of the laws seem to be gender neutral, they often target women more due to their matriarchal role in the family and due to unfair gender biases. There are also laws that specifically target women, like laws against witchcraft, indecent clothes, and abortion rights. Outdated laws, often from colonial times, are being used to criminalize women, especially the poor and vulnerable. Plus, as women's rights face backlash, there's a real fear that these laws will be used even more to target them. This report highlights a global injustice, with women increasingly punished for the very circumstances they're struggling to overcome.
The United Nations has released a damning report on Iran, revealing how the government is using drones and digital surveillance to brutally suppress dissent, particularly against women. They're deploying apps that encourage citizens to report women who violate the strict dress code and using facial recognition and drones to monitor compliance. Women who resist face severe consequences, arrest, beatings, and even rape. This crackdown follows the 2022 death of Mahsa Amini, which sparked massive protests. The UN report highlights a pattern of state-sponsored vigilantism, where the government pressures ordinary people to enforce these oppressive laws, showing a disturbing escalation of control over women's lives.
Well, I'm gonna tell you fascists, you might be surprised. People in this world are getting organized. You're bound to lose, you fascists bound to lose.
Thousands of scientists and their supporters rallied nationwide on Friday, March 7th, in opposition to the Trump administration's sweeping cuts for scientific research and mass layoffs impacting numerous agencies, including the National Institute of Health, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, and the National Weather Service. Protests happened in Washington, D.C., San Francisco, Denver, Boston, and over two dozen other cities. Many participants were describing themselves as mad scientists, because they were really angry. Hundreds gathered here in Wisconsin at the state capitol. Protesters participated in a march around the square and heard speeches delivered by community members whose lives and work could be directly impacted by the proposed funding cuts. We'll hear some from the participants. The audio collected by Shayna Clark of WORT's Local News.
My name's Cassie Leach, and I'm a six-year grad student. Our lab relies on NIH grants and funding. We're still going right now, but the future is very uncertain. I mean, for myself, it's, will I have the funding to finish my project, to get my PhD, and continue doing this research? Science is for everyone. We're not in this to make, like, millions of dollars for ourselves. It's not a lucrative career. We're really doing this because we care. We care about our research, we care about discovering new things, we care about innovation, and those are things that will always impact the greater good, and that's why we're all here today. Science saves lives, and we do this for you.
My name is Jane Furschgott. My sign here says, science reveals truth. I think I've heard so many lies lately that that's what is in my mind. I think people in the administration don't really know what they're doing. What people here have been talking about today is our future, our young people being trained to work for the future, our country, because our country is strong because of research and science.
My name is Madeline Topf, and I'm a graduate student at UW-Madison in microbiology. Due to funding uncertainty, they are cutting admissions in multiple grad programs in the sciences, which is a big problem for science because grad workers do a majority of the labor for scientific research. So by having fewer grad students working on research, we're going to delay progress and new technology and hurt Wisconsin.
My name is Anna, developmental biologist at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. I do stem cell research. The American people have been maybe leaning more towards anti-science, anti-facts, and I don't know why we got off track, but it's so important, and education is so important, because when we're not educated, we're easily fooled, and when we're easily fooled, we're easily controlled. I really think it's amazing how many people showed up today. We came all the way from Milwaukee, and we weren't really sure if we were going to be just a handful of people, but I'm really impressed with the support. I just urge us to keep doing what we're doing, and hopefully we can make a change.
One of the national organizers of Stand Up for Science is Emma Courtney, a cancer researcher and PhD candidate at Cold Spring Harbor Laboratory in New York. She spoke last Monday with Amy Goodman of Democracy Now!
I'm coming at it from a graduate student perspective, where I'm currently looking at what my thesis is going to look like over the next 3 years, and realizing that a lot of the ways that I've originally kind of thought about my science are being impacted by these current executive orders and budget cuts and kind of the censorship of science that's happening right now. And so that, I think, is where a lot of people are coming at, is looking at what they're doing and the impact it has on communities, and then looking at also how that's being taken away right now.
Talk about the level of the cuts, whether we're talking about NOAA, the climate scientists, and whether we're talking about basic cancer research, and also how is this affecting your colleagues, older and also students, whether they can trust staying in basic science?
I think we're seeing right now orders saying, like, which words you can and can't use in your grant proposals. I am coming from a breast cancer perspective. I study breast cancer. I study women's health. And right now, you're not able to really put into proposals that you are studying women or females or looking at barriers or looking even at how race can influence cancer outcomes.
You mean you can't say words like barrier, yes, race, women in the grant proposals?
No, that's the current advice, is grants are getting flagged for having language that is containing those words.
You know, it's really interesting. One of the beneficiaries of the National Institutes of Health may have an interesting father. Mother Jones is reporting that the Vogt family, as in Russell Vogt, the head of the OMB, but more significantly, considered the architect of Project 2025, his daughter had cystic fibrosis. They credit a cystic fibrosis drug for helping their daughter's treatment. That research was funded by the National Institutes of Health. Talk about the significance of basic research.
Yeah, so the National Institutes of Health fund a lot of basic research that's really critical in providing kind of the scaffold for these treatments later on. And so when we're looking at cuts to the NIH, we're looking both at cuts to the workforce and the opportunities available to scientists, but we're also looking at kind of the impact long term of losing these basic science projects that really have the opportunity to drive cures for people like individuals with cystic fibrosis and cancer. And it's incremental steps over time is how science works. And so the basic research, it might not seem immediately impactful all the time, but as you compound these findings over years and you have scientists continually working to find cures, things do happen and we get to these treatments that are very transformative for the people with these diseases.
Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. recently announced that HHS would no longer allow public comments in the rulemaking process, ending a policy of a half a century to involve public opinion in HHS decisions.
I think it's very important to have the input of scientists and people who have personal interest in these topics. I think their comments are really useful in making sure that our policies are informed by science and rooted in evidence and have the ability to really drive progress. I think when we have kind of a unilateral decision-making power, we're maybe losing out on perspectives that are really critical and just making sure that science is able to help the people that need it most.
Emma, I also wanted to ask you about scientists around the world and warnings. Your institutions, whether we're talking about universities or independent labs, in our next segment, we're going to talk about a young former graduate student who has a green card, has just been taken by ICE. We're not sure where he is. But the warning that was put out to people on visas around the world who work at scientific establishment in this country.
We had a lot of discussions leading up to the event on March 7th about how we could best include international scientists and not put a target on their back, because we know that there's currently this order where visas can be canceled and you can kind of face repercussions that you would not face as a citizen if you're on a visa. And so we wanted to make sure that there's a way to productively engage, but I think it became even more severe when we did have that post put out where President Trump did allege that if you took in an illegal protest, you could face significant repercussions to your visa. That is harmful right now because science is such an international endeavor. America is such a land of opportunity for young scientists. It brings so many scientists over from other countries for training that then go on and make significant impacts both in the U.S. and in their home communities and worldwide. And so we really want to make sure as well within Stand Up for Science that we are speaking to the perspectives of international students and those who might not currently have a voice because of these orders.
Yeah. Where do you go next?
That's what we're currently trying to figure out. We are a group of early career scientists. None of us have done significant political organizing in the past. And so we're kind of taking a step back and looking at what matters to people right now. What are the best places? We want to make sure that we're taking into account all perspectives, because this was something that was put together very quickly. It had impact. It has momentum. And now how do we use that to really drive change?
That was cancer researcher Emma Courtney, one of the core organizers of Stand Up for Science, interviewed on Democracy Now! Democracy Now! Can be heard 5 days a week on WORT and anytime at all at democracynow.org.
And we continue with our focus on science under the current regime. The new Secretary of Health and Human Services is going to have a big impact on women's health. Reproductive justice advocates are bracing for RFK's attack on the safety of abortion pills. This, despite the fact that more than two decades of studies have shown abortion pills to be safe and effective. But there's more to be vigilant about when it comes to Kennedy's approach to making America healthy again. For Her Turn reporter Arlene Zoucha talked with Dr. Adrienne Fu Berman, longtime feminist health activist and head of a Georgetown University project called Farmed Out that scrutinizes the pharmaceutical industry.
Now that we have a new Secretary of Health and Human Services, can we talk a little about the impact that you think he will have on women's health? What are some of your areas of concern?
Well, I'm very concerned about RFK Jr.'s qualifications and attitude towards health in general. He seems to have an antipathy towards evidence-based medicine, and that's going to be bad for everyone. So it's not just his anti-vaccine predilection. So it's been widely reported about his anti-vaccine views, and that really is a problem, even though there's certainly a case to be made for taking a nuanced view towards some vaccines. There are vaccines like polio and measles, mumps, rubella, that are proven to reduce deaths and that really should be required. And we're already looking at measles outbreaks in the U.S. among people who are not vaccinated. But it isn't just that. He has supported hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin for COVID, even though those have been disproven. He supports raw milk. This is a particularly dangerous thing to do in this era of bird flu, which has been infecting cattle and milk. Pasteurization is what's standing between us and possibly an epidemic of bird flu. There are many subjects that he's talked about where he really doesn't have an understanding of science or of evidence-based medicine, and I think that's going to be a big problem.
He says he's going to make America healthy again. Do you have any areas of agreement with him? Because when you hear make America healthy, guess we can agree with that, no?
Well, it's a good tagline, but it's really important to apply a standard of evidence and to be aware of risks of any therapies that are being promoted. And I have a long history in alternative medicine, but I'm really concerned. It's really important that we support evidence-based alternative medicine, and you know, we should be against things that are either harmful or that don't have an evidence base supporting them. Having the same standard that we apply to conventional medicine and use that same standard for alternative medicine. So I publish a reference text on herbs and dietary supplements. I teach about medicinal plants. I worked in NIH in the Office of Alternative Medicine before it became the National Center for Complementary and Integrative Health. There are some alternative therapies that should be incorporated into medical practice, but they should be the ones for which there are randomized controlled trials showing that they're helpful, and they should be ones that are not harmful. It's very important that the FDA keep its role of assessing and approving therapies for which the benefits outweigh the risks for what they are being approved for. I'm very concerned about RFK Jr.'s stances on these things. He's already canceled a meeting of the vaccine advisory panel at the FDA that was supposed to happen in a few days. That's not a good sign.
Do you think any of the changes that he has mentioned about food additives, etc., do you think any of them can be helpful?
There may be some aspects of regulation in the food area that might be helpful. He's come out against direct-to-consumer advertising of drugs, which may not be popular with other members of the administration. But really, people have too much concern about direct-to-consumer advertising of drugs, mainly because it's in their face. They see it. Everybody sees it. But it's actually not as important as the covert effects on information that pharmaceutical companies have on information that goes to consumers and to physicians. they're using industry-funded consumer advocacy groups to push their agenda. They're funding key opinion leaders or influencers in the medical field to write articles and testify for legislation and regulations that benefit them. Their influence on the medical literature, their influence on medical information is much, much more important than advertising. Everybody knows that advertising is about pushing drugs, but they're more covert means of affecting what people know about diseases and what they know about drugs is more important.
Thank you. That's interesting because I've always thought that all the spending that drug companies do on advertising was a big issue, but I hear what you're saying about other more maybe insidious ways.
Yes, it's actually it's a pretty small percentage of what they actually spend on promotion. Yeah, their influence on consumer advocacy groups is very concerning in ad advisory committee meetings at the FDA. I've been part of advocacy groups like the National Women's Health Network that have testified at these meetings. It's important for the public to be able to testify. But when many of the groups that are testifying are groups that have been started by pharmaceutical companies or are heavily funded by pharmaceutical companies, what they're advocating for is not actually helpful to the public health. They're not even required to disclose their conflicts of interest when they're testifying before these committees. So anytime a pharmaceutical company can get its message into the mouth of a third party, whether it's a consumer advocacy group or a medical society or an influential physician or an influential influencer on social media, that's a win for them.
You co-authored a report a few years ago called What Needs to Change at the FDA. And if I heard some of the rhetoric coming out from RFK Jr. correctly, he seems to agree that more transparency is needed, that there's too much closeness between regulators and industry. Do you see any common ground there?
I would certainly support increased transparency and accountability at the FDA, but I would be very cautious about the use of that term by anyone connected with the current administration. People in Trump's administration have essentially taken what amounts to a loyalty oath to him, and the rhetoric that is being used in the Trump administration is Orwellian. They'll say that they're rooting out fraud and corruption and they want increased transparency at the same time that they are covering things up and committing fraud and being corrupt themselves. This is what's happening in Trump's administration. I hope that it doesn't happen at the FDA, but I'm not optimistic that anyone associated with Trump's administration would actually stand up to what Trump wants.
So who can women look to now for some accurate information or accurate advice when they're thinking about health issues?
That's a really good question, Arlene. With the demise of the National Women's Health Network, the demise of Breast Cancer Action, the demise of a number of groups that have been independent and have provided information that's independent, it's hard to know where to turn for accurate information. I can answer this better in terms of healthcare providers. There are independent drug therapeutics newsletters. There are still some independent advocacy groups out there. There's the National Center for Health Research. There's Public Citizens Health Research Group, which puts out Best Drugs, Worst Drugs, which is excellent. So there are still some sources of independent information, and hopefully there will be some other groups that arise to do this. But we're not in a good situation right now. I would really encourage people to use independent sources of information to do your own research as much as possible and just to avoid any industry-funded information or industry-funded groups as much as possible.
I've been feeling so frustrated and it's hard for me to stay engaged. How do you stay engaged?
It's really important to stay in this battle. And we really have to establish community and keep our standards and be brave, stand up for our principles, stand up for evidence-based medicine, stand against industry influence on information. You know, it's important to cook and eat with friends and keep that community as well. We need communities of people who will actually stand together and fight the worst things that are being promoted by the Trump administration in a variety of areas. And there's joy to be had in the battle. You know, you don't always win, but sometimes you do. And even when we don't, we can be an inspiration to people who come behind us. It's really important to involve, listen to, and support the younger generation. Many of us who've been working on these issues for a long time or older, and we really need to bring along younger generations in all this. But it's important not to give in to being depressed about all this. I mean, we're in a bad situation right now, but it's important to get together with other people and laugh and talk and eat delicious things.
That was Dr. Adrienne Fu Herman, a director of Georgetown University's Project Farmed Out, talking with Her Turn reporter Arlene Zoucha about today's challenges to public health.
Okay, I want to talk about Ireland. Specifically, I want to talk about the famine, about the fact that there never really was one. There was no famine. The Irish people were only allowed to eat potatoes. All of the other food.
Sources used in assembling today's program include WORT's Local News, Democracy Now!, Mother Jones, The Guardian, BBC News, the USA Today, UN Women, and the Feminist.org Newswire. Today's edition of Her Turn was produced by Christina Kivlin and Joanne Powers, who is also our on-air engineer. Other contributors include Arlene Zoucha, Eliza Howard, and Garima Gupta. Now stay tuned for 2.5 hours of women in music on Her Infinite Variety. For Her Turn, I'm Eliza Howard.
And I'm Christina Kivlin. And remember, the revolution will not be televised.